answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Governor of Illinois has written to President Biden to say the federal government's lack of intervention and coordination at the border has created an untenable situation for Illinois. Does anybody outside of the White House think the immigration policy is working?
So here's what I can tell you. I just mentioned that the president requested $4 billion for a supplemental funding to address what we're seeing at the border, right? And to manage what is happening currently at the southwest border, more specifically. And Republicans continue to block us. They do. They continue to block us. And without Congress, the president has taken action.
That's right. It's all the Republicans' fault. You see, it's not the Biden administration's fault. It has nothing to do with any of the policies that they've implemented. It has nothing to do with foregoing the Remain in Mexico policy or ditching the Title 42 provisions. Nothing that the Biden administration did. Everything's fine, but if it's not fine, it's the Republicans' fault. That's what you always have to keep in mind. Thank you for joining us today. It's Thursday. It's October 25th, 2023, and you are listening to the Larry O'Connor Show, Larry Connors USA. I am Susie Moore. I'm filling in for Larry while he is out today. Very, very honored to be doing that. And in addition to our 6 p.m. program on 101.9/94.1 Newstalk STL, you can catch video stream of the show. It's on the Facebook and Twitter pages of Newstalk STL and Larry Connors USA, and also on Rumble. So either way, you can be sure to join us here in the studio and catch the show in case you miss anything. And if you miss any of it, you can also go to Larry's website, LarryConnorsUSA.com. There are multiple ways to watch and listen to the show, and we appreciate you tuning in. So be sure to subscribe and share at Larry Connors USA, and again, we appreciate you joining us here to talk about all the hot issues today. We started that out listening to Karine Jean-Pierre, White House Press Secretary, talk to us about what's going on with the border and what the administration is trying to do to address it. And it's, you know, it's about funding, apparently. It's not about policy. For those who don't know, I am the deputy managing editor at Red State. And one of our sister sites is Town Hall. And they had one of their contributors who actually went to the border recently, Jonathan Emmerd, who I think has been a guest on Newstalk STL before. He went to the border to see for himself, and he had some pretty alarming things to share about what he saw. He says, I just came back from an eye-opening CBP tour of the U.S.-Mexico border, San Diego sector. The agents gave him, kind of an eye-opening explanation and tour of what their day-to-day was like and what they could expect to find there. So he lists a few things that he noticed while he was there. In one instance, the CBP showed me where water sometimes flows from Mexico to the United States. To accommodate the flows, large drainage tunnels have been constructed out of concrete. CBP welds onto the openings of the tunnels iron grates. Cartel agents who carry diamond cutters on their belts regularly cut the grates to facilitate illegal entry of drugs and gangs. They try to block things off. Nope, no good. In another area, you can see where the Biden administration ordered the border wall construction halted, and it's wide open. There are Mexican cartel dwellings on the Mexican side of the border. Before his visit, two illegal aliens crossed onto American soil, and that's what CBP calls no man's land. Let's see, what else did he observe there? In the third area, they've got deep tunnels traversing the border underground, extending one half to 2 miles into the American interior. He also encountered a young man from Ecuador at the border wall and asked him why he did not seek asylum at the U.S. Embassy in Ecuador. He said that was too bureaucratic and required a lot of paperwork. So, you know, I guess it's easier just to go ahead and come across, because apparently there really is no negative consequence to that as far as once you get here. Obviously, it's a dangerous journey, and there are lots of negatives and drawbacks to it, but obviously there are thousands and thousands of people who think it's worthwhile to do so. And so that's what they're doing. And yet we're not really seeing a whole lot of relief from that. And it's not just an issue that is affecting the southern border and the southern border states anymore. It's actually moved up into the country because whether it's the government itself or some of the state governments, people are being transported from the border up to the interior, including to Chicago. And you know what? There are some Chicago residents who are not real happy about that and have let that be known. They were at a town hall event, I think, on Tuesday night, and they had something to say about that.
Chicago residents are fuming at a community meeting last night over how the city is handling the overflow of migrants in their city. Watch.
We come in a community of black people where we already get the low scraps. And then you want to take the little scraps, the resources that we have, and put us at the bottom of the barrel? That's not fair. And I won't have it.
I want Mayor Brandon Johnson to understand that you're selling us out for people who can't vote for you.
Obviously, some unhappy people, and for good reason. These are American citizens who feel like their needs are not being addressed in any way, shape, or form, and they're being shoved to the side for people who are kind of being, you know, having the welcome mat rolled out for them. A number of states and municipalities are having to dig deep to try and find the resources to address these issues. I know that I just saw a headline yesterday that there are aliens being housed at O'Hare Airport. I've seen stories where they're in police stations, running out of room to put everybody to at least address their immediate needs. And people are fed up, and it's not just Chicago, it's New York, it's everywhere. People are fed up with this. And yet, you know, we're what, 2.5+ years into the Biden administration, and the answer so far has been the border is closed, it's not open, and everything's fine. And again, if it's not fine, it's the Republicans' fault, and that's why we have these issues. But late last night, news broke that the administration was going to try something maybe a little new, a little different. Maybe this will help address the issues that we're having. That's right. They've come up with a brilliant idea to help solve the disastrous border crisis. And what is that idea? Build a wall. Now, if that sounds familiar to you, it might be because the prior administration and previous president made that sort of the centerpiece of his administration and was called all kinds of names for doing so, was accused of being racist for doing so, and bigoted and xenophobic, and we were told over and over again, walls don't work. But nonetheless, that is what the Biden administration is now proposing to do. You know, it's, I guess, maybe better late than never, but why they're deciding to do it now in October of 2023 rather than continuing with the progress that was already made through Donald Trump's tenure is, you know, that there's a good reason to question that. What was it that made them decide to do that now? What is afoot here? I mean, we can be grateful that they may be taking some affirmative steps to help stem the flow, because obviously something's got to give. But if you're like me and you've watched this administration over the past 2.5 years, you may have some questions as to why this is the solution now. I'm skeptical that this will actually get done. It's possible that they're going to take this tack and then say they need more funding and then blame it on the Republicans if the Republicans don't approve it for whatever their reasons may be. I guess we'll have to see. You know, the other interesting aspect of this turnabout or this seeming U-turn that they've done is that in order to do that, they're going to have to waive a number of environmental laws like the Clean Air Act, the Safe Drinking Water Act, the Endangered Species Act. Those are all things that, you know, a big part of this administration is about being considerate of and mindful of the environment and addressing issues like climate change. So the fact that they're willing to waive all of these environmental provisions to now build the wall, well, that's an interesting turn, too. Apparently, our Alejandro Mayorkas has finally decided that it is actually a dire situation. He's actually acknowledged that, and he's saying that this is the something that has to be done in order to ensure that expeditious construction of the barriers and roads in the project areas and has to be taken care of now. Kind of seems like he's changed his tune from his prior stance on this, but he's citing an acute and immediate need. Well, yes, it's acute and immediate, but it's acute and immediate by, because of what what this administration has been doing. So, you know, it's one of those things where I guess it's what I guess I commend them for doing this, but I'm not sure that I understand exactly why now and how effective it will be at this stage of the game. It's also an interesting change of pace for President Biden himself, because previously his stance has been, no, I'm not going to build a wall. I will not do it. There is nothing that I will do. There will be not another foot of wall. He actually said that in 2020. I think we've got the clip of that.
No, there will not be another foot of wall constructed in my administration, number one. Number two, what I'm going to focus on, the fact is that somebody in this group written a lot about the border.
So not another foot of wall in this administration. I guess he's changed his mind. I don't know that he has an explanation as to why. And anybody who's pretending that they're surprised by this, by what has happened based on their policies, I think probably wasn't paying close attention, or maybe he's being disingenuous. Now, of course, his changing his tune hasn't made some of his fellow Democrats very happy. There's Beto O'Rourke, who... failed presidential candidate, failed senatorial candidate, but nevertheless, he is from Texas, and he has some things to say about it as well. We've got an article up at Red State today. Beto O'Rourke just tossed Joe Biden under the bus and backed over him. You know that the policy change, it seemed kind of abrupt, and obviously it wasn't, maybe the memo didn't go out in Democratic circles, but Beto's furious, and he had something to say about it on Twitter. He said, walls don't work. Okay, we're back to that. President Biden promised he wouldn't build them. Well, he's right. President Biden did promise that. It's now even harder for voters to distinguish between him and Trump on border immigration. Well, I, for one, don't have a problem with that, but I'm sure Beto feels differently. And this is a wasted opportunity to use executive power to actually fix our asylum system instead of impotent political posturing. Well, I don't disagree with him that the asylum system might need to be fixed, but maybe we have different ideas about what that looks like. It's interesting, though, that he's back to the walls don't work. If they don't work, then I don't know what his objection is. I'm not sure. But, you know, I was recently in Texas, and we're going to change things up a little bit here, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about what I observed while I was there. So I had the opportunity this past week to spend some time in Austin, Texas. My sister lives there, and my other sister and I went for a visit. And I was curious as to what, if anything, I would see and observe in Austin that relates back to the border situation. I will tell you, I did not observe anything directly that I would say really reflects the border crisis. What I did see, however, was a tremendous amount of growth, some booming. There's been so much growth in that city. I think the last time I was there was 10 years ago, and the growth has been exponential. It's kind of bursting at the seams, and that is, of course, because a lot of people are flocking to Texas, not only from the southern border, but also, you know, from within the United States. A lot of Californians have moved there. Elon Musk has moved Tesla there. There's a lot of industry moving there, and it has become sort of a destination, and that's a good thing in many respects, but it also makes for lots of traffic and extraordinarily high housing prices. And some of the issues that we're seeing kind of play out throughout all of our metropolitan areas with overcrowding and inflation and some homelessness, quite a bit of that. So it's interesting to see how that all plays out. You know, one of the things that I thought was interesting while I was on my vacation, I, you know, deliberately turned off work as best I could. But I didn't turn off the news alerts on my phone. So I was still kind of keeping abreast of everything, kind of keeping up with what was going on in the world. And I made this little observation, I think it was on Tuesday, that, you know, I'd been on, at that point I'd been on vacation for 5 days. And in that time, Dianne Feinstein passed away. Her replacement had been named and sworn into the Senate. Jamal Bowman, a Democratic congressman from New York, had pulled a fire alarm in the Cannon office building in an attempt to delay the vote on the continuing resolution to keep the government funded, although he says it's because he was kind of confused and just trying to find a way out of a building that he's been in on a regular basis. To that point, the Congress did narrowly avert the shutdown and vote in the continuing resolution to fund the government for the next 45 days. What that's going to look like 40 days from now, your guess is as good as mine, because in the process, they also managed to oust the current, or the now former House Speaker, Kevin McCarthy. I guess he lasted about 9 months, and then that was it for him, and now we don't know who's going to be replacing him. Also, we found there was an arrest in Tupac Shakur's murder, and I had to go back and look and see exactly how long ago that had been, 27 years. Hard to believe that. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Signaled that he may make an independent run at the presidency, since he's not really getting any traction in the Democratic Party because he's not really having an opportunity to. So that could shake things up quite a bit. Hunter Biden, first son, pled not guilty to the felony gun charges that are pending against him. And the fraud trial, the civil fraud trial of Donald Trump, former President Donald Trump, began. And I think I left a few items out of that list, but I did note maybe I should go on vacation more often. At least if I go on vacation, that's going to give other people plenty of things to talk and write about. But it also gives me stuff to talk about, too. And it is interesting thinking about, you know, in that condensed amount of time, all of the big news items that have happened, things that, you know, in years gone by, we might have thought would, you know, each one of them on their own could have been kind of earth shattering and stopped everything. And that would have been the focus for days or weeks. And yet anymore, it seems like pretty much every day, if not at least every other day, we're having big news items happen. And we haven't even really, really, really gotten into the heart of the presidential campaign season. And yet, every day there's something new. I'm sure while I'm talking to you, something new will break too. And again, from a media standpoint, from somebody who talks and writes about this stuff for a living, I guess it's good. It keeps us busy. It gives us plenty of things to talk about. But it is a little overwhelming. It's like trying to drink in information from a fire hose, and it's a little hard to keep track of it all. But we're going to spend the next hour and a half or so talking about some of these issues, you know, and some other ones. I've got a few guests lined up to talk with you, including some of my red state colleagues and a California parents' rights advocate. And we've got plenty to talk about. I know that, you know, we already talked about the border, but the big item for the past couple of days has been what's going on in the U.S. House. What's going to happen with the speaker? Who's going to become the new speaker now that Kevin McCarthy is out? What's that going to look like in terms of the negotiations with the Biden administration? Because as I mentioned, the CR only lasted for 45 days. They're going to be back to these budgeting issues in just a short amount of time. And somebody new is going to be in Kevin McCarthy's position. So we're going to have to look at what that's going to look like. We'll be chatting about those and a number of issues throughout the show. Coming up right after this, we're going to be speaking to my fellow Red State contributor and former producer Thomas LaDuc about the shakeup in the House and what we may have to look forward to. Lock and load, ready on the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Hundreds of homeowners and businesses had or will have water main breaks. Wellington Environmental has a warning. You can clean up the water, but if you're not checking areas where the water leaked in the walls where you can't see it, you could end up exposing your family, your employees, your clients to hazardous mold. Wellington Environmental reminds you, if that mold is not detected, properly treated, removed, that is a risk, a liability you do not want. Wellington clients, including hospitals and schools, trust Wellington to make their environments safe. Call 314-644-4930, 644-4930, AAA rating with the Better Business Bureau, 314-644-4930, Wellington Environmental, your world, cleaner, better, safer. Be well with Wellington.
What if everything you thought and believed to be true about owning and buying your home turned out to be wrong?
Straightforward, objective advice on the right way to make the most out of every dollar you put into your home.
We're the only country that has one of those. Most other countries, considering like Canada, the UK, they don't have long-term fixed-rate mortgages like that. They're all variable-rate mortgages.
HomeWise with Michael Midget, Sunday mornings at 9 on News Talk STL.
Tim Jones and Chris Arps in the afternoon.
Horace, Americans individually have lost over $4,000 in income and over $7,000 where you have a household with both parents working.
It shouldn't be, it's the economy, stupid. We should just say, stupid! It's the economy. Unbelievable the devastation that Americans are feeling.
Tim Jones and Chris Arps, weekdays at 3:30
on News Talk STL.
This is Christina Strait with Strait Realty reminding you, why pay more than four? In 2003, we had a dream to start a real estate company that would revolutionize the real estate market. Now, 20 years later, after navigating through the many markets' ups and downs, we know exactly how to help you in this challenging time. I'm Christina Strait, owner of Strait Realty. Don't give away your hard-earned equity. Give us a call today, 314-441-4444, 314-441-ALL-4s. And remember, why pay more than four?
Strait Realty is a licensed broker in the state of Missouri.
I guess I grew up on an older road, a pedal to the metal, always did what I told. Until I found out that my brand new clothes came secondhand from the rich kids next door. And I grew up fast, I guess I grew up mean. There's a thousand things inside my head I wish I ain't seen. And now I just wander through a real bad dream, or feeling like I'm coming apart at the seams. But thank you, Jack Daniel, low number seven, Tennessee. Whiskey got me drinking in heaven and I'm...
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Welcome back to Larry Connors USA. Susie Moore filling in for Larry today while he is out, and I'm going to be joined now by a favorite guest of mine, and who, in addition to being a writer and regular contributor at Red State, he co-hosts the Wednesday night VIP Gold Chat at Red State. His name is Thomas LeDuc, or as we all know him, Duke. He also hosts the Duke Over America podcast on Facebook every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday morning, and the Duke Over America show Sunday mornings on WAAM or WAM radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Oh, and he used to be my producer. Hello, Duke.
Good afternoon, Susie. You're doing a great job as always.
Oh, I'm trying.
I can't take any credit for that, unfortunately, but good job anyway.
Everything I do that's good is from you, and everything I do that's bad is from you. I'm just going to lay it all on you.
Okay, I can handle that.
That's the way it works in politics, right?
That's correct.
Everything's the other guy's fault.
Absolutely true, 100%.
So, Duke, I wanted to have you on today to talk about, I was kind of mentioning this in the first segment of the show. I've been on vacation this week, as you probably are aware. And
oh, yeah.
While I was tuning out work, I wasn't tuning out the news, and I was kind of half giggling to myself the whole way about how crazy everything was. And in my absence, apparently, everybody decided to go crazy all at once, including the U.S. House. They did something I did not expect them to do, and that wasn't that they passed the continuing resolution. I was pretty sure they might get that done, but they ousted the speaker in the process. What happened?
Well, my speculation is, and from talking to people, you know, that are living in the swamp there, yeah, there's a little bit of a personal grudge there between Matt Gaetz and Kevin McCarthy. We all remember what happened in January. It took 15 votes to finally get him confirmed, and Gaetz didn't actually vote for him. He just sat down, which lowered the threshold. Mm-hmm. And, I'm going to take an educated guess that one of the things that they negotiated back in January is that they would change the rule back to what it was before Nancy Pelosi, where one member could get up and object and vacate the chair. McCarthy agreed to that. And Gates used he held that card in his back pocket for a while, and he used it the other day.
Well, Duke, you've written about this quite a bit, but before I get to your most recent article on it, I want to get your thoughts on this. Do you, just looking at this as an observer from the outside, what do you think Gates' ultimate aim is here? Because he's not angling for the speakership for himself.
No.
So what's, I mean, other than a personal grudge, that's a pretty big way to to get back at somebody. Got any other insight as to what might be going on there?
Well, the whole notion is, and was premised on my article, was that, $33 trillion in debt, we're not doing anything about that. We're passing continuing resolutions. Well, okay, so what are you going to do about reconciliation? And they're not mentioning any of that. That's where the Senate basically comes up with their version of the bill. They have to get together and mend it out. And it just kind of sounded hollow to me. And so I think his motivation is Gates wants to be popular with the people on Twitter and Facebook and what have you that are rightly upset about this. And you can be correct about the issue, but you can be doing it for other purposes. I don't want to say they're nefarious necessarily, but it is one of those things that I listen to him speak about this stuff and I'm like, and he never takes the and. He never goes forward with it because I want to make sure I get the 60-second, 120-second clip that's going to get a lot of views. And if people get upset at me for saying that, great. You evidently don't understand how social media works with somebody who's trying to garner attention. And I'm not very popular because I don't do that. And I'm not saying that as something backpat worthy. I just basically, I want to have an honest discussion about what's going on. And I think Gates is kind of pulling back on some of that, because if he actually tells those people that are happy that he pulled the trigger on McCarthy, by the way, we're going to have to cut your Social Security benefits you've been paying into for 30, 40 years by 50%. He's going to become the most unpopular person very quickly.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I don't think he wants to be unpopular at all. He may have sights set on the governorship in Florida or something along those lines. You have a great article from yesterday that's called Get Ready to Hate Whoever the Next Speaker Is. And I know there's been speculation about who it might be. We don't know that yet. We won't know possibly till next week at least. What was the premise of your article? Whoever takes that job is going to be hated.
Yeah, and it's pretty simple. If you continue with the thought that Matt Gaetz and the other people who I've listened to some speak since then all seem very sincere that they were worried about a number of things. Here's the first thing. I just mentioned it, reconciliation. The House has the responsibility to pass bills that have to do with the budget. Mm-hmm. But the Senate also has a role in that. And they have to go through a process where they both come together. And they say, okay, so we agree with this, we don't agree with this, such and such and such. Chuck Schumer is not passing 12 individual bills. He's not. Government shuts down. Okay, you're fine with that? I'm fine with that. I've been through, I think, two government shutdowns now that I recall. It didn't really affect me that much. It does play havoc with the economy, but if you're sincere about this, then you're fine with that outcome. So the continuing resolutions argument is garbage because the Senate's not going to do that. And then you're going to have, well, you've got the Senate controlled by the Democrats and Joe Biden's probably not going to sign that bill, or whoever's pretending that Joe Biden is whatever. I don't know. But so that's not going to happen. OK, the second thing is, and every one of the people that went down on the floor and spoke, and I watched this live because I'm a C-SPAN nerd.
I know you're a C-SPAN nerd.
I think Brian Lamb is one of the greatest Americans ever to live. He's the one that created C-SPAN. We're talking about $33 trillion in debt, 100%. In that article that I did yesterday, I actually posted from the Congressional Budget Office, and then I go a little bit farther with budget analysis from the Cato Institute. There's an additional $80 trillion that's going to be owed here in about 70 years.
Whoops.
All right. Yeah. On top of the $33 trillion, and they're not mentioning where, I think in the article, it was 95% of that $80 trillion is going to be from Medicare and Social Security. We have to do this now. All right. The budget estimate says 2032 that more money is going to be going out than is coming in. I'm pretty sure it's sooner, and I had somebody in the comments actually say it's already happened. And I didn't see any evidence of that, but I wouldn't doubt it because the government has constantly moved, you know, the goalpost on this.
Sure.
So if you're not willing to talk about the $33 trillion in debt and the biggest payouts that the government's going to be doing here within a number of years, I don't take you as being serious.
So it sounds like, you know, whoever takes on that role is basically going to have to be willing to maybe tick off everybody to get anything done.
Well, I did see Jim Jordan yesterday come out and say, okay, I am not for funding the Ukraine. Great. That is a very solid stance, I'm all for that discussion and what have you. That's one of the things that McCarthy, I guess, allegedly, Joe Biden came out and said they were going to do a separate deal on that. But all of a sudden, people want to believe what Joe Biden says when most of the time I don't believe anything Joe Biden says. I knew what he was as a senator from Delaware. Nobody is going to be able to fulfill all of those requirements. And let's say it's Jim Jordan. Jim Jordan becomes Speaker of the House. That now takes him out of the committee chairmanship, where he's doing a great job on the investigation of the information they're getting from Hunter Biden. You're taking him out of that position now.
Yeah, my hesitation there. I really don't want to see that post abandoned, although, you know, there's other people that are capable, I'm sure.
Sure, absolutely. That's what Liz said. Let's say the next person is almost as capable as Jim Jordan. Jim Jordan is not going to be able to get 12 separate bills through Chuck Schumer's Senate.
Right.
It's a fairy tale. And he's going to have to do a continuing resolution. So now, is that enough to remove Jim Jordan? You know, that's why I think some of the arguments that I was hearing the other day were kind of, I'm going to use a big legal word maybe, Susie, here, specious. You know?
Good word.
Yeah.
Good word.
Yeah. It just, I kind of sat there and I was like, okay, this is more of a personal grudge to get likes on Twitter.
Yeah. It does kind of seem like that. And you know, I mean, obviously personalities are going to clash along the way. But you're right. There, you know, who is going to hold that position and be able to please the people who were displeased with Kevin McCarthy on a policy standpoint? It's a little hard to figure that one out.
And he very well may have lied to Gates. He very well could have. I mean, Chip Roy and Thomas Massie have come out and said we were in the room. That was never promised.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows? Okay, that's a discussion amongst politicians who you should be looking at skeptically to begin with anyway. But if you're really upset about the CRs and you're really upset about the $33 trillion, there's nobody that is going to be able to sit in that chair and able to do both of those things. And I'm telling you right now, the first politician that walks up to a microphone and says, we have to talk now about the future liabilities of Social Security and Medicare, I will probably follow that person right off a cliff because they're crazy. And I absolutely appreciate somebody who's crazy but is talking truthfully.
Well, I definitely can appreciate that. Duke, we just have a little bit of time left here. So in that time, why don't you tell folks where they can find your work?
Well, at Red State, as you said, thank you for having me on, redstate.com. I'm under Duke. You just go to authors and you'll see me posting there. And then also on Facebook, Duke Over America, my I almost said fan page. I don't have fans.
Sure
I have
do.
People to get. No, they get. I get people that are mad at me. So Duke Over America on Facebook, and that is where I post my show on Sunday mornings in Ann Arbor, and then my Facebook Lives Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for joining us, Duke. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Susie. Take care. Enjoy the rest of your vacation, by the way.
Thanks. Stick around, folks. We'll be back right after this.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at LarryConnorsUSA.
This time of year, heavy rains, high winds, they can hit, and if you have any loose shingles, even the smallest hole in your roof, you're taking a major gamble with your biggest investment. I can tell you from personal experience, do not wait until you have water where it shouldn't be. Don't forget that John Beale has disaster crews, which can at least cover your roof until the damage can be fully repaired. Homeowner, business owner, call John Beale. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. I have only one recommendation for you when it comes to jewelry. Vincent's Jewelers. I've had Vincent's custom make some pieces for me. I've bought quality pieces right out of the case. Vincent's locally owned, supporting local charities for more than 42 years. Check their website daily for new items or specials. Vincent'sJewelers.com. Vincent'sJewelers.com. Give Vincent's a chance for your business. Vincent's, my only jeweler. You can spend a lot of restless nights trying to figure out how you're going to make all those credit card payments. Why not consolidate all your debt into one manageable payment? My friends at Homestead Financial Mortgage can help with a cash-out refinance. Contact them today. Take the first step in regaining your financial freedom. Use my website, larry.homesteadfinancial.com. Take charge of your financial future. Go to my website, larry.homesteadfinancial.com.
News, analysis, opinion.
USA, USA. That's a big game, man.
President Xi is really losing control.
People in China didn't ask me about people mowing each other down in a mall.
This is News Talk STL.
It is their responsibility.
Hate is a metastasizing agent.
We're all keeping a close eye on this.
Illegal immigration is crazy right now.
The United States is not being overrun.
News Talk STL.
It is a crisis at the border without question.
At NewsTalkSTL.com.
I really, really enjoy a great cigar and a premium whiskey. And if you do, you should join me at Lit Cigar Lounge in the district off Highway 40 in Chesterfield. Lit is open to everyone, but I decided to become a member. You can too. Get special gifts, special events. Ladies, don't be intimidated. Bring a group of girlfriends. You'll also enjoy Lit Cigar Lounge. Lit also has a cigar and tobacco shop on Main Street in Old St. Charles. LitSTL.com. LitSTL.com.
And where down we go, 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 go. And where down we go, 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 go. So where down we go, 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 go. Way down we go.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Welcome back, folks. While he is also a writer and regular contributor at Red State, my next guest, Jeff Charles, is also the host of A Fresh Perspective podcast. And in addition to writing at Red State, he's a contributor for Newsweek Opinion and also has a Substack called Chasing Liberty. He's a freelance writer, political contributor who's appeared on Fox News, The Hill's Rising, Fox Soul, Newsmax, and First TV Network. Jeff, welcome into the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Susie.
Oh, happy to. I always enjoy talking with you because you always have an interesting, a fresh perspective, if you will, on the hot topics of the day. And I wanted in particular to talk with you. I mean, you're a prolific writer. I know as an editor, I know that firsthand. And you cover a number of topics. You know, you focus a lot on like Second Amendment issues, education issues, and then just regular news of the day stuff. So you've got a wide variety, that you cover. But one of your articles yesterday really caught my attention, and maybe I'm maybe more dialed into it because I have a college student. My daughter is a senior in college. This article that you wrote yesterday, it's called Coddling or Care, the Fine Line in Modern Education Practices, really caught my attention. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what that was about?
Yeah, so I stumbled on this article, and it was about the service. It's called a concierge. It's like a concierge service for students. And I guess the parents of the store, really, it's the parents. They pay about 10 grand per year, and they have a concierge service that will basically take care of all of their chores, all of their adulting, if you will. So basically, I mean, it's almost like you're having like a mother that you hire to come in and to do your laundry, pay your bills for you, you know, send off mail and all the little things that, you know, adults are supposed to do, but you're basically outsourcing it. And when I saw that, I was amazed because I was just thinking, you know, how far have we sunk to where people are outsourcing the things that you do when you're an adult. You're supposed to do those things yourself so you can learn responsibility. But now, you know, there's at least some college kids who are using the service to avoid having to do that. So I think it kind of says something about where our culture is going as far as the lack of an increasing lack of independence.
Absolutely. I think it really does highlight that. I know I've seen articles recently talking about, like, the expenses, and usually it's the parents, of course, paying, they'll go to decorate dorm rooms and that sort of thing. But this takes it a step further. And as you say, it's outsourcing just basic kind of adult responsibilities. And obviously it's, you know, probably something that you see more in institutions where people of means are sending their kids, their students to college. So certainly, something for people of privilege, I guess, if you will. But nonetheless, setting aside the sort of exorbitant expense, it does say something when you're basically trying to protect, I guess, young adults from having to be young adults.
It is. I mean, I think it speaks to a really deeper issue because realistically, I mean, like we were saying, I mean, this is basically well-to-do parents who are doing this for their kids. Sure. Not everybody can afford to. But there's also other ways in which America, through our institutions, are coddling children. In the article that I wrote about it, I also mentioned the bias response system that a lot of schools are putting into place that basically encourage young kids to rat out other kids if they say something that's racially biased or biased against LGBTQ. And to me, it's just in the desire to protect our children, we're actually keeping them from growing stronger and learning how to handle things on their own. I mean, when I saw that, I was thinking, you know, I got called racial epithets. I'm a black man. I got called the N-word when I was a kid, and I learned how to deal with it on my own. Like, my first instinct wasn't to run to the teacher, or when I'm trying to do my adult stuff, my first instinct isn't to say, well, how can I outsource this? And when you focus so much on overprotecting your children, you're actually doing a disservice. And I think that's where our culture is going. Like, the next generation, these are the people who are going to be leading this country, making policy and being in charge of our institutions. And to me, it's kind of scary if we're just going to outsource our responsibility to another type of authority. I mean, that just sets us up more for even more authoritarianism, really.
Well, you're right. I mean, you know, if you're now a leader, but you don't really know what it's like to take account, you know, to be accountable and to take responsibility, who do you go to when things aren't going your way? Who do you appeal to? Do you run to the court system? Do you run to some sort of governing to the government, you know, in general, to share your grievance? And yeah, I mean, I think there's a fine line there. I mean, you want kids, obviously, you know, especially younger kids, to be able to reach out for help when it's needed. And if they're being bullied or mistreated or abused and harmed in some way, that does need to be addressed. But, you do have to wonder about people, for instance, from my daughter's generation. How do they deal with conflict? Do they work on conflict resolution, or do they just run to somebody else to have them fix it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and I think that, you know, when we have that type of society where we can't even handle conflict, you know, especially since we're all online now, we're not even really interacting in person as much anymore, then we still have more of that divide, more of that disconnect. And it really does make for a weaker populace. I mean, because the thing is, there's no sense of balance here. Like you said, nobody wants kids being bullied. Nobody wants people on the receiving end of racial epithets. But at the same time, there has to be a balance in that way, the way those things are handled. And individuals have to learn to be individuals and to work it out on their own. But now it's increasingly clear that the next generation is having trouble doing that. So to me, it doesn't portend anything good for the future of the nation.
Yeah, sadly, I think you're right about that. And Jeff, I know you a lot of times cover a lot of, you know, other stories that have to do with our education system and some of the invasion, if you will, of it, of the woke policies and progressive policies that I think it may kind of tie into what you're talking about, because the less independent thinkers you have, the more willing you are to cede authority, maybe it's easier to sort of, I guess, promote a certain agenda or viewpoint.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I always say is if you want liberty, that comes with responsibility. And in too many ways already, we have abdicated a lot of our responsibility to the government or to another authority or governing institution, which means that, you know, when it comes to taking care of our fellow man, we think that it's somebody else's job to do it instead of ours, which is, you know, if somebody is an authoritarian or an elite that wants more control, that is the perfect scenario. That is the perfect climate to expand power, because now you've got people more amenable to the idea that, hey, I don't have to do anything about this.
Right.
Let's see what the government can do.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a shame. And I do think it all kind of ties in together. Speaking of the government, I'm going to change things up a little bit here real quick. I was talking with our colleague, Thomas LeDuc, moments ago about this too, but I wanted to get your take on this. With everything that's been going on, and of course, as you know, I was quote unquote on vacation this week, so I wasn't right there in the thick of it, but I was keeping tabs on you all and reading your articles and keeping up with what was going on. And of course, the ouster of Kevin McCarthy has been probably some of the biggest news. And I know you've written on that a little bit as well. Who do you think is most likely to take the role of speaker now that McCarthy is out?
Yeah, you know what? It's really hard to say. I mean, when I first heard the news, my first thought was Jim Jordan, because I remember when they were first choosing the speaker, people wanted Jim Jordan to run. And and I've heard rumblings about that even before all this, before the Republicans took back the House of Representatives. People really like Jim Jordan. I mean, he is a bit more of a principled conservative, more so than a lot of his colleagues. So I think that he has a very good chance. I know Steve Scalise has thrown his hat in the ring, and he's looked on very favorably as well. But then at the same time, Kevin McCarthy, most Republican voters approved of him when he first got on board.
Right.
So, I do think that maybe people are ready for change. But my caution is that even if it is the most principled conservative, it doesn't necessarily mean things are going to change. Because remember, the vast majority of Republican lawmakers voted to keep Kevin McCarthy as speaker. So one man can't do a whole heck of a lot. I mean, he can probably do some good, but I mean, he's got the machine against him. And it would take a whole other machine to combat that.
That's true. I mean, they're still going to have to work with the Senate, which is Democrat-led, and the Biden administration. So it's not going to be an easy job for whoever walks into it, that's for sure.
I definitely don't envy anybody in that position. It's going to be tough.
I mean, even
if you're on the more conservative House Freedom Caucus side, you're still going to have to be able to deal with the moderate faction, the people that McCarthy represents. So even if Republicans were to take back the Senate and keep the House, that doesn't necessarily mean we're going to get a huge sea change coming up. I mean, the establishment is very much concerned about preserving the status quo. And you know what? They are very, very good at it.
You're right about that, Jeff. I appreciate you joining me today to talk about these topics and let folks know where they can find your work.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Jeff Charles Jr. My Substack is called Chasing Liberty, and my podcast is called A Fresh Perspective.
Well, great, Jeff. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
All right. Folks, did your phone go off and make a weird noise at you yesterday afternoon? Mine did. I think everybody's did, really. We'll talk about that coming up.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Wow, that was my reaction when I walked into Napoli C, now open on the streets of St. Charles, right next door to Napoli 3. And Napoli C is like walking into a two-level submarine. Fish just outside the portholes. The menu is going to be filled with various seafood, lobster, crab. Good luck with choosing. Napoli C is now open on the streets of St. Charles. Join me at any Cafe Napoli. Clayton, Town and Country, Napoli 3 in St. Charles are right next door, Napoli C.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Oh, there you go. Okay, thanks everybody. I'm just kidding.
I actually
just
turned mine off.
All right. It works. Every couple of years, folks.
Your last statement set off the alarm.
Yeah.
Your last statement set off the alarm.
She's right. It works. That was Karine Jean-Pierre. It's a little hard to hear over the blaring alarm sound, but that was White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre. Of course, everyone's phones went off in the middle of the White House press briefing. And, you know, we all had plenty of warning ahead of time that this was coming. This was a test of the emergency alert system. They let everybody know. Again, even though I was somewhat incommunicado, I knew it was coming, so I wasn't terribly shocked by it. But it was kind of funny to see that it sort of went off in the middle of a lot of, you know, important proceedings and sort of caught everyone's attention. As Karine Jean-Pierre mentioned, this is something that they do every few years. Folks may not remember this, but during the Trump administration, this was done as well. And I think there were some interesting theories at the time about what was really going on. I know yesterday's test brought with it some theories as well, because I think the Russians were supposedly testing theirs yesterday, too. So that got folks talking. I know that our Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, was in the middle of a conference at the time, and I think he even made a quip about the fact that, you know, maybe this was our Russian friends trying to get in touch with us. And there were congressional hearings going on at the time, and I believe the good senator from Texas, Ted Cruz, was interrupted during his portion of the hearing.
Yes, we rely on these chips for consumer electronics and cars, but they're also in just about every...
Test alert.
We need
to come back.
Just tell them what
we already did.
It worked.
Yep.
I think your time is up, Senator.
We have an emergency in semiconductors.
That was a nice segue by the senator there. I think they were in the process of questioning Labor Secretary or Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo, and they were talking about the semiconductor industry, and you know, obviously there were some important things going on there, but even they had to interrupt their proceedings momentarily for the emergency alert system. You know, I guess it's good to know that it works. We've certainly had incidents lately where that's been an issue, and there have been some question as to its efficacy. You know, and it's I guess good to know that they can coordinate on that level and get everybody alerted all at once. Presumably, they can provide additional instructions if there is an actual emergency. This one yesterday, of course, just said, you know, there's nothing that you need to do. This is just, there's no action required. This is just an alert to let you know. But with everything going on, I mean, I can understand why some people maybe had some concern about what, you know, what was there a hidden meaning behind this? Apparently, there were some folks on social media that were convinced this was sending out some sort of special message to their phones that was going to somehow create issues with their efficacy after that, and people were vowing they were going to turn off their phones so as to avoid that happening. I don't know if anyone actually did that. I don't know nanoparticles, that's what they were worried about. Test had spurred falsehoods on social media that it's part of a plot to send a signal to cell phones nationwide to activate nanoparticles as graphene oxide that have been introduced into people's bodies. Experts and FEMA officials have dismissed those claims, but some social media users said they plan to shut off their cell phones. Well, that sounds a little out there and a little fringy. I will agree, a little conspiracy theorist. But in fairness to people who maybe were considering that, you know, a lot of things that were treated as and labeled as conspiracy theories in recent years or poo-pooed by experts or shot down or specifically negated by government officials have then later turned out to be accurate. So while I was not worried about nanoparticles yesterday, I definitely do understand why people have some concerns about it. So, you know, I get it. I get it. There are other things going on in the world, though. There's lots to talk about still. We've got the presidential race going on. And some shifting amongst the candidates there and who's leading who in the various states. Parental rights are a big issue right now, and I've got a guest coming up in the second hour we'll talk about that with. And there's also the out-of-control crime issue. We've seen over and over again, you know, lately, like these smash and grabs and flash mobs and looting and rioting, and things really seem to be getting out of control. And Regular American citizens are getting fed up with that, have something to say about that, and unfortunately some of our law enforcement officials aren't really taking it seriously. So we're going to be talking about that when we come back. Be sure to stick around. And remember our pledge, one nation under God.